So we're going to be thinking about entrepreneurial thinking, and in particular, entrepreneurial thinking in a manufacturing setting where maybe the freedoms are slightly different to how that might play out in other industries. So I'm joined by three people. I'm going to let you guys introduce yourselves.
So I'm Simon Farrell. I am responsible for a function called Steering and Technologies, which is basically a lot of the financial headcount steering and some of the central maintenance, lean improvement, that sort of function. And I work for a bit of the business called the Painted Body Organization.
Nick Evans, I have the same responsibility as Simon, but for the assembly organization.
Gareth Emmett, I'm general manager for material supply. I have the responsibility to get the material here so we can build the cars and also delivery assurance for the suppliers.
Right. So we're going to start with probably the question that was right on the table at the beginning. Like, given how structured manufacturing environments are, how much entrepreneurial freedom do you genuinely believe that you have in your area of the business? I'm not talking across the whole organization. For your function, how much entrepreneurial freedom do you feel you get?
So for us, I would say the line between where you get entrepreneurial and where you don't get entrepreneurial, you don't tend to get very entrepreneurial with anything that's going to affect volume, let's say within a month or so. Everything would maybe not even go that far, but certainly there's a definite time scale over which you can start to have a few experiments. But anything in the short term, I would say we're very, very process driven and we're not really a risk taking environment. I mean, I don't know what it's like where you guys work, but I don't generally make very many experiments which are going to take place in production today unless we're absolutely certain we know what will happen.
So if you were looking at your colleagues and they were saying, Simon, do you want us to be kind of entrepreneurial in our thinking? Would you say not really or a little bit? And if so, like where, how does it show up?
Yeah, it's a super question, isn't it? And the one that we've debated many times. If you're talking about, for example, one of the areas I run where we would rebuild weld guns and the guy said, do you know what, we're going to put it together in a completely different order, not test it and just put it into production this afternoon. I don't think any of us would be particularly wildly enthusiastic about that idea, no matter how much time it saved. So from that point of view, we wouldn't be entrepreneurial at all. But if we got into things like, shall we run an exercise, create a team that can establish itself and set its own Kaizen principles up on how better to build weld guns, then we'd be very happy about that. In fact, I'd be really happy that that happened without me being involved in it at all. So I suspect there's similar things go on elsewhere in the business, but that would be my view on it.
In my view, it actually depends on the scale and scope of what you're trying to do, because we actually encourage actually all of our associates to do, let's say, small scale, low level innovation or experimentation quite often because there's some issue or there's something that we want to try and improve, and you'll just run a small scale experiment. So it depends what you mean by what the system allows us to do and how big it is. So take your weld gun example. That's fairly mission critical within a body shop. There may well be other elements of the process or of that particular piece of equipment that you can try and optimize, and you just need to understand what you're looking for and how you judge what a good outcome is and what you can learn from it.
I'm wondering whether when we think entrepreneurial, we're into a kind of process thinking, like, what am I going to do? Is there a part of this that's more about mindset? Like, what would you want people in your functions to be thinking or feeling?
Yeah, so at least within material supply, obviously you have a plan, you have a plan process, you have a end-to-end process which you're trying to adhere to, but the world is dynamic outside. And there's lots of challenges in the world and also in the supplier base. So I would say giving some freedom of time and thought in relation to that allows you to be creative and use risk-based thinking. And we get our guys to try and think about creative ideas to solutions. So quite often the situation is we might impact assembly or we might impact the body shop by having a shortage. And what we try to do is give the guys the freedom to take the best risk-based decision to avoid the biggest impact. So sometimes we have to have an impact into the production area. But you know, I've lost my train of thought, sorry.
I mean, I have an example maybe while you get your thoughts, if you can remember what it was. So we restructured our intern program to try and generate much more digital capability and get better at using things like machine learning to better predict the performance of the painted body organization. Now, I must admit, I took a little bit of a risk because I basically decided that although we'd live within the same number of interns, we would have completely different interns and organize them differently so that we got much more rubber on the road from a digital point of view. And fortunately, so far, that's been really quite successful. And to Gareth's point, what it enables us to do is take far more risks because we're now much better able to quantify the risks that we're taking. Whereas previously, you'd say, well, if you run the store to this condition, you're only one breakdown away from an absolute disaster. We would now say, yeah, but the probability of that happening is really low. And if we take that decision every time we're in that situation, we'll waste a load of money. So for me, that's been the classic example of where it's within your own area, you can take a risk. It's not going to threaten today's production or even tomorrow's production. But what it did do is got us in a much better position to land the production system where we wanted it to be, say, 4 weeks out. So from that point of view, we definitely have scope.
One of the things that I want to give people a bit of insight into is like how different functions might prioritize differently. So I'm thinking in an event of like a crisis, an unexpected event like equipment breakdown, line stoppage, what does your functional area go to first in those moments? Like what's your top thought and top priority? And how is it different to maybe how other technologies might prioritize in those exact same moments? Because that can sometimes create a bit of conflict, I think.
So as I was kind of alluding to before, our business is to try and mitigate the risk and try and focus on the containment. And we're normally in the supply chain privy to the risk much earlier than our colleagues here. And that's where I was trying to get to before, that we're trying to have creative solutions to solve problems to avoid impact. So our focus and our pressure to a certain degree is quite high. And it's almost a release valve telling these guys that we're going to have an impact if we can't solve the problem, because you have the world on your shoulders to try and solve that issue to avoid an impact. But sometimes it's inevitable that we're going to have an impact. And it's almost like a release valve sometimes to tell the world that we're going to have a problem. And then how can we then solve that within the different technologies? And I think communication within that is key. But often we take the pressure on our shoulders to try and solve it as quickly as possible without having an impact. And really, that's our daily business. And reflecting back on the entrepreneurship and the risk-based thinking, that's what we do every day. We're weighing up the risks versus the cost. And definitely in the world as it is today, cost is a bigger driver. Sometimes it's cheaper to stop production than it is to pay for a plane to get some parts here, whereas in the past that might have been different, but the world is changing. So
there's a bit of judgment there that has to happen, and then I guess you have to live with the consequences of having made that judgment. What other people say, their reactions to it as well.
Well, it's not my favourite point of the day if I have to text Nick and Simon that we're going to be stopping their production line. But actually, I think we have a strong leadership team, and it's not personal. It's a situation that's happened, and I think that's something from a leadership team we're very good at working together and helping each other out and understanding the critical nature of the topic, without asking those questions, well, why did it happen? What's the root cause? Yes, we get to them later to understand so we can mitigate it in the future, but we work together to find a solution.
What about for you, Nick? Would you prioritise the same thing, you think, in an emergency, or do your functions lead you to see things slightly differently?
So I'm thinking back over, let's say, the last 5 years. Okay, so we've had different scales. We've had significant technical stoppages. And there it's always the same. You don't know exactly what the issue is. You don't know how long it's going to be stopped. You don't know what the impact's going to be on the rest of the business in terms of supply chain with parts that are coming into the plant or where painted body is. And in that respect, first of all, you need to let the experts get on with the job and try and keep that pressure away, yeah, because they know what they're doing, but they need the time and space to be able to do it. It's not about being entrepreneurial. It's about managing that particular situation. And then, as you described, Gareth, the dialogue and communication is the most important thing, so everybody understands at least what the situation is, even if we can't give a prognosis. Take another environment. Again, the last 5 years around COVID or Ukraine or some of the other things which are completely unexpected from an external point of view, our process does not have go to page 25 and it will tell you exactly what to do in those circumstances. At that point, you very much need to be able to share what does that mean, how do we take care of the people, what does it mean in terms of the system, what are some of the technical challenges and how do we deal with that. And at that point, having a common understanding of what we're trying to achieve, which fundamentally is safe working environment, we need to make sure we take care of our associates, we need to produce cars to the right volume and to good quality, all of that starts to get framed into, okay, what's important in all of this? And then what's the best way to achieve it? And it's by coming together in various forms of communication to then develop that. And to some extent, we then feel at the middle of it, because a lot of the impacts that we see or a lot of the effects that we see end up with our ability to push cars across F1 or not.
Right. So, I mean, one thing I'm hearing now is that there's, at least at your level, there's sort of some level of collegial spirit to work through stuff in a way. And I'm just wondering, how do you navigate when trade-offs happen? You know, maybe when you're pushing for a target that may benefit your function but could negatively impact another department, like what are those scenarios? When have they come up and how did you navigate that type of situation?
So I think the first point I'd agree with is it is very collegial. I think there's an enormous amount of trust in the general manager population, leadership population in Plant Oxford around, yeah, you spin a dice or whatever, one day it'd be Gareth, another day it'd be me. Slightly less frequently it'd be Nick, but I mean, from time to time, you know, it would be all of us at some point in time. And there's never a question about competence or enthusiasm or willingness to actually get the thing solved. I remain always impressed by how collectively the plant's prepared to do whatever it can to recover from a challenging circumstance. I think to your earlier question around how do you prioritise things that different people want to do? And I think we have a similar situation to what Nick was describing. You try and keep the pressure around fixing the issue away from the people that are fixing it. One of the challenges that we have, though, is that, and I think this is inherent in the BMW culture, we are expected to be able to make quite precise statements about the extent of the disruption we're going to cause when we generally have pretty partial information. One of the complexities we have in the painted body process chain is that there's quite a lot between some of that bit of the process chain. I guess this is similar to Gareth's world. We can have a disturbance quite a long way from Nick's world, and you're second-guessing how big this disturbance is, how long it will take us to recover from it, and whether it is actually worth, to your point, I guess, sending the balloon up and telling everybody there's going to be a big issue. In terms of, I think your point was around the things that we can do to help each other. I think, collaborate amongst, for example, the maintenance functions and the quality functions really well around controlling those issues. For the production teams themselves, I think often there's relatively little they can do to help one another. I mean, you can either run a bit of the wax line in paint or you can't. But.
Oh, there's definitely been instances where, you know, we can do something where we can support with some associates, shift a bit of labour around, depending on what the nature of the issue is. We've also sent some of our guys have gone out into the supply base as well, where there's been a serious technical stoppage there, and we're not familiar with their system, but it's in all of our interest that they get going as quickly as possible. It's another entity, it's another company, they're a supplier to us. We can just sit, you know, we could just use the big BMW hammer and say, well, it's your obligation to get this sorted. But in reality, everybody at some point in time would, you know, can appreciate some support and help.
I would say that the understanding definitely coming out of COVID, there was a big appreciation about how everything joins together. And it's a complex machine, the end-to-end process from a supplier producing a part to producing a car and the body and so on. So there's definitely a bigger appreciation. I think we shouldn't 100% give the impression that everything is plain sailing and everybody gets on all the time. I think there's a good respectful challenge between the leadership and between the general managers to ensure that we're doing the right thing. And I think that's really important that that remains. we can challenge each other in a professional business way and have an appreciation of each other's processes. And I think that's a key to having a successful business and be able to solve problems together, essentially.
And it's very much taking time out to establish what that common ground is, because you said do the right thing. Well, sometimes that the opinion of what the right thing is can vary. Yeah. And it's only by actually talking it through and understanding perspectives, understanding, you know, overall what's the best thing for the plant is determined by a few metrics and KPIs with a lot of complexity of what goes into it. Unless we start to share and understand a little bit of those other perspectives. Why is somebody saying this to me? Yeah. You know, why can't I build? I can see the bits there. What's the problem with putting a car down? And then you get underneath, well, what really is going on and where is the concern and to what extent is that a risk that we can take in the right direction?
And I think overall there's an element of compromise on either side which is supported based on the understanding. And we have regular exchanges, Nick, on you having a very good OEE means that we maybe build a few more cars than we planned to build, and therefore I haven't ordered as many parts as you need for the day. So there's this constant to-ing and fro-ing of that. And that's probably one of our unresolved topics. We're not fully on the same page, but I think we respect each other's points of view, and both of us are right to a certain degree. And at this time, it's right to be pushing through and being efficient as possible. That causes me a few headaches, but we can suck some of those up.
Now, at your level in the organization, there are forums and circles where you get the opportunity to share and to discuss and work through. How would you want your teams to kind of resolve tensions? Like, should it escalate up in order for you to kind of go GM to GM and sort it out? Or would you want your team to kind of take the opportunities to try and resolve tensions or to get involved in these types of topics?
Always, I would say. I mean, but for me, it's been one of the things I've frequently observed in my working life is that it's very difficult to get a consistent message out of a senior conversation down to actually where the car is being built. So I was first in starter shift meetings 15, 20 years ago, and you'd have a conversation in your 7:30 starter shift or 8 o'clock starter shift meeting, and then something would happen in the course of the day, and you think, how did we get from that conversation to what then happened later that day? And I know everybody involved in those conversations, and they're all okay. So I think it is absolutely one of the biggest leadership challenges we have to somehow get not only the verbal element of the communication, but the spirit and the tone of it through our organization. And it's been something that I think I've seen as a challenge for the last 15 years at least.
But it's not static. Yeah. People move around, people change. There's different styles. They have different understanding. Yeah. I came to Oxford, whenever it was, 20 years ago, without knowing a handful of people in the plant, because I came out of a different environment. I came out of powertrain. Yeah. So I didn't know who to speak to in Painted Body. I didn't know who to speak to in HR. You have to build those relationships up. And yes, there are circles where we sit together from time to time, but not necessarily circles that would deal with some of the topics that we've discussed here. And that's then having the trust, if you like, or the confidence, or understanding that there's enough of a relationship where you can then ring up the phone, pick up the phone, and I can say, look, Gareth, what's going on? Should I be worried about this? So there's not a formal platform where that conversation will necessarily take place. So if you then talk about the rest of the organisation, I would encourage anybody to do the same. Yeah. The more insight that anybody can gain in another part of the business and a different technology, a different function, the better, because those contacts will pay off.
Yeah, I think, like Nick said, there's a lot of respect, and is being able to pick up the phone and say, look, no, we really need something, or to try and understand. And Nick even phones me sometimes early in the morning to tell me how the M40 is going, because we have supply. If there's an accident,
not knowing you're on holiday. So.
Early warning.
But as far as the team leaders and the specialists, they should be challenging the status quo. They should be trying to resolve the issues. But I think we shouldn't shy away from escalation. Escalation has a place and is good method to resolve some conflicts. Yeah, I think we shouldn't shy away from that. I know we talk in Oxford a lot about the mini spirit, and there's a lot of mini spirit, and it goes a long way. But I think to really resolve topics, sometimes escalation is required. And I think it's something we shouldn't shy away from as a leadership team throughout the hierarchy.
Absolutely. So we're sort of getting into that, like, what are some of the challenges that people face and how do we resolve them when it's cross-departmental, cross-technology? You guys have been in different roles. What's a challenge that another function experiences that you've come to appreciate more and more over your time in the business? Like, maybe at first you thought it wasn't relevant or you weren't really that aware, but now you're going, actually, those guys have a really tough job to do. And I think I underestimated that in previous years.
So I think you'll find numerous examples, because building cars is hard work, it's complex. I can reflect on a time where I was in the material supply function, actually not in Oxford, but in Goodwood. And I had a new position in the change coordination, so dealing with engineering, making sure the bill of material and the parts list is correct for the vehicles. And I was sat in material planning before. How difficult is it to get a correct release and to get it right first time? And then I moved over there. It's like, well, how difficult is it to get the parts? And change of perspective and understanding of the complexities and an appreciation of that. And even 2-3 weeks ago before shutdown, we had a deep dive. There's two people in my team that focus on body and white in detail. Unbelievable amount of complexity that they're dealing with. And I really had no idea. And they're in my organization. So constantly, I think you can find pockets of the organization where you're like, wow, that's impressive what we're able to deal with. And that's why it's important to ensure that processes are robust and we're not relying on people. But I think we can find a lot of examples.
Yeah, because in my mind, sometimes another... the action in another department like impacts my functional area, and my initial go-to is to be frustrated by that functional area. And I guess as we kind of mature in our roles, we sometimes realize, no, actually, if I think about what they're dealing with, they've actually got a really tough challenge, and we could overlook that from time to time.
Overall, we've run a complex business. It's not just making cars is complicated. We've actually got a high degree of complexity within the nature of the business that we have. And it's also important to recognize that as humans, we're fallible, which means that mistakes can happen, which means that we should always look to how can we de-risk, let's say, or limit the impact. But things do go wrong from time to time. And how you deal with that and learn from it is by far as important as good old sports sayings. You learn far more from a defeat than you do from a victory. And it's been able to, you mentioned mini spirit earlier on, you go, where does that actually come from? And it comes from being in a degree of a fight all the time in terms of trying to make sure that we can continue in the right sort of way. There's an element about making sure that we build on foundations and that we keep a successful business going here in Oxford and Swindon.
Yeah, and I think, Simon, you sometimes talk about the belief that we can compete, right? Instilling that in people. What's that? What does that mean to you?
For me, it means that what Plants Oxford and Swindon are living at the moment is the future they've earned over the last 25 years. One of the benefits I have of having been working in a mini project before it was even in Oxford, I've seen the whole story all the way into the plant and to where we are today. And maybe over the last 5 or 10 years, the success story of mini has seemed like more or less a foregone conclusion. And they're wonderful cars, brilliant brand, excellent sales and marketing organization, etc. Why wouldn't it be successful? But I can remember the times between 2001 and 2010 when the future seemed a great deal less certain, where the plant did not really have the respect of the rest of the group. And we were, as Gareth has, and Nick has already said, we were in a fight all the time. And I think being able to draw confidence from that is one of the most important things for our team. I always try and draw in the communications event I do with my team, I always like to finish with the Ayrton Senna slide. I can't overtake 15 cars when the sun's shining, but I can when it's raining. And the message for me is, look at what you've achieved, keep your head down, do your day job very well every day. Don't worry about the future. The future will look after itself if you are able to focus on quality, productivity and volume achievement every day. And that's, I think, one of our principal tasks as leaders is to, you know, take that distraction away from people or address it and recognise it for the fact that it's genuine and people will be worried about it. But try and bring it back to what you can control. And those are the things for me that we should take a lot of pride in. You know, we are now a winning team. We've won a number of quality awards and we've demonstrated to the rest of the group that on many, many performance metrics, we really can hold our heads high.
Absolutely. So if we bring it back then to the idea of an entrepreneurial spirit that we would maybe need to see in order to secure our future, as it were, I wonder if when we think of entrepreneurs, we're thinking of like the salesperson, the new idea. But the other part of being entrepreneurial is essentially kind of taking responsibility for your... As an entrepreneur, you don't depend on other people. You get stuff done yourself. You kind of muck in, and that's all part of being an entrepreneur. You sort of stand and fall on the efforts that you're putting into the business. So I'd like us to think about entrepreneurial spirit as a whole package, not just the experimentation and the ideas piece, but the business owner thinking of my area as like my little my business that I'm running, and I'm going to try and take responsibility for it. So if you think about that whole picture, what would you hope to see in our culture by way of entrepreneurial spirit, given the constraints of a manufacturing environment and all the different technologies that sit within that?
The thought I've got in my head is there's two streams to this, because one is around the process itself and how we can improve and innovate, and those functions which, you know, we've set aside capacity, or we've given the task to some areas to then facilitate those sort of ideas, you know, underpinning continuous improvement. The other part, which we hadn't really touched on, is how this translates into what individuals do and what their own pathway is. And in that respect, we've taken, I think, organizationally all the way through, quite a high degree of risk in the way that we give individuals opportunities to show what they're capable of. Okay. With the right sort of safety net.
Say some more. Yeah.
So we've had amount of success in recent times about seconding people into other functions to see if that's something they want to do in the future. You know, I mentioned before about, and I think Gareth touched on it as well, you get a very different view if you've actually worked in a particular part of the business than if you're observing it from outside. So, okay, what can we do to facilitate that experience? So in some respects, it may not be the most cost-effective route.
Got it.
Yeah, because I'm not necessarily putting somebody who's the ideal candidate into a role and giving the opportunity. However, that's a short-term view. The long-term view is it's better for the individual because they've got a better understanding of what else goes on in the business. As a business, we've got more exchange, and therefore you get a better exchange of ideas. The, you know, what do I expect my team to ring up people that they know within other technologies? Yes. How able do they feel to do that? Well, it's much better if you've sat alongside somebody for 3 months and got a better insight of what they do every day, and you've spoken about the football and you've had a cup of tea or coffee or something like that. And I think in that respect, what sits underneath the mini spirit, if you want to call it that, is a willingness to exchange, is a willingness to sort of recognise that somehow we're in the same, we're on the same boat, we're in this together, and therefore there is a common ground, and it's in all of our interest to work in that direction.
I think there's also a really interesting contrast between what happens at, if you like, a local short-term level and what happens at a sort of higher, a broader, higher level. So I think some of the things that certainly in the world of mini manufacturing we've done that have been most innovative and arguably risk-taking are things like some of our supply-based choices, where we would take a supplier that might not have made its way through a normal BMW nomination process. We've done things like allowing other people to design our entire car for us, which is not common practice in the BMW group. And recently, and close to home for us, we have gone what we call the integration route, where we would use essentially the body and white facility from the previous model. And rather than replace it, which would be the normal BMW group practice, which is continually modify it over a period of a year or so, That's enormously stressful because essentially you have to empty it every weekend, take it all to pieces, put it back together again by Sunday night, and then run it perfectly on Monday morning. And it's the perfect contrast between the high and the low level. So the high level strategy, if we're going to save an enormous amount of investment, make a compelling business case for the plant and keep many in business, that's entrepreneurial, innovative, etc. But if you're the maintenance or production individual on a Monday morning who's now expected to get 46 units an hour out of the cell that was in pieces over the weekend and the previous weekend and the previous weekend, if you're the production associate who's working their eighth or ninth Sunday evening in a row to refill the thing, then life feels very different. And that's, for me, where our factory has really earned its living.
Absolutely. Yeah, and we, of course, have to somehow make sure people have a full appreciation of why some of these decisions that might look utterly crazy
in the moment. Yeah.
Like you say, that high-level picture, which is probably would appear much more relevant to GM level or something like that, you have to make sure that's really understood and supported. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, I think on a lower or local level, trying to give people the opportunity with some time and some space, a bit like the secondment I think that you mentioned, but also locally, the guys and girls have really good ideas. Yeah, so having some time to reflect on a topic, get some feedback, and listen to the audience, the ideas, brilliant ideas come out of the teams, and we need all of those ideas at the moment. And I think the second point is communication and people really understanding where they're contributing and what benefit they can bring to the business. When you're on the line building the car and you're talking about a new model, it seems very far away. But being able to do your process perfectly, contributing to good quality, delivering right first time, not requiring rework, things like this all have a contribution. And I think there's a big communication piece about people understanding their piece of this very complex puzzle, which is building cars. And everybody has a part to play in delivering.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, we're reaching the end of the discussion, but two things have really stood out to me as you've been explaining how you approach these things. So the first is that actually you seem quite direct with each other. So you are openly acknowledging, yeah, we have tensions, and yeah, sometimes I do something that impacts something else. But you can orientate yourself around the bigger picture goal, and it allows you to move past or take a perspective on it that at least helps you understand. But somewhere underneath that, there's the relationship part, that you can be direct, you can go and talk to the person. And I wonder whether in our request of people being entrepreneurial, we also need to say that there's a dependency there on being upfront, open, communicating with other functional areas, having those relationships and having that directness. So it's not just about easy conversations here. Sometimes it's actually quite tough conversations. You might get frustrated with each other, but ultimately we kind of work through it a little bit. I hadn't really fully appreciated that. For the people going through this program, is that a message you would want them to take away? And in what way would you want to see people at lower leadership levels expressing that?
Hopefully one of the things that's come across in the last few minutes is that we have a high degree of trust and mutual respect for one another. And I think that's the thing I would encourage our leadership population to generate by being able to spend time with their opposite numbers in different bits of the business. I think we accomplish far more informally than we do formally. Our informal processes are far more effective and quicker. And that would be the thing I would encourage all of our leadership community to do, to try and develop that network.
I mean, you described it as directness. For me, it's more about openness, honesty, transparency, and so on. And airing concerns, but in the right way. That's what it comes down to in terms of feeling comfortable and having the trust to be able to do that. And I hope that's an environment which we encourage and maybe demonstrate. We have, you'll know, some things have gone wrong in the past, and we run some lessons learned exercises. And very often it's a question of communication, dialogue, somehow lacking or missing, yeah, which is behind what then ends up as a fairly complex and difficult situation. And in one of them, there's a phrase which has stuck in my mind, which is along the lines of, nobody comes to work to do a bad job, okay? Nobody's coming to work to do a bad job. Everybody's coming to do their best within the framework of what they see. And if you hold that in your mind, then that's a very different attitude, let's say, to where I see that there's something that's not what I would like it to be, or you know, can be made better. Then if I've got that behind me, then it sets the right tone for how that conversation can proceed.
Yeah, absolutely. Fantastic. Thank you all for your contributions.
Thank you.
Thank you. Well done.